Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting. On the web at asmallorange.com. From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech, technology worth talking about. We're here to make technology simple, easy, and approachable for you.
Got a question about your computer, smartphone, tablet, or the internet? Give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com.
This week, we're going to answer your questions about... What was that?
Whoa, was that a ghost? Someone trying to communicate with us from beyond the grave?
No, I think it's our producer, Sean Birch, trying to communicate with us from the control room.
What do you think he's trying to tell us?
That this week is a very special Halloween episode of Deemable Tech.
Death and the digital afterlife. Cool. Ray, I thought I'd start us off with a little ghost story in honor of Halloween.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right, I read this on a blog called The Stir on CafeMom.com. And the author, Jacqueline Burt, writes, "This past August marked the 2-year anniversary of my father's death. I recently moved to a new home, a process that included many hours spent emptying out storage spaces and organizing closets and sorting through the contents of dusty boxes and thinking maybe it would be easier to just burn all of my belongings in a bonfire and start over. Late one night, exhausted and frustrated after a long day of relocation-related chores, I logged onto Facebook mindlessly, figuring it would be a good way to wind down before going to bed. I was wrong. Immediately, my eyes went to a picture on the right-hand side of the screen, under the People You May Know heading, a photograph of my father, with his name. What? As far as I knew, my father never had a Facebook account. I'd even searched for one after he died, in a moment of feeling super sad and wanting to hang on to something, to anything of his. Oh my God, I screamed, scaring the heck out of my boyfriend. I pointed to the laptop screen. Look! Now my boyfriend, unlike me, is a skeptic. A tolerant, open-minded skeptic, but a skeptic nonetheless. So I was surprised when the color drained out of his face. Oh my God, he said. He opened the bedside table drawer and pulled out a small photograph. I found this on the floor today when you were packing. I forgot to tell you. He handed me the picture. It was the exact same photo my dad used for his profile pic, even down to the tear in the corner. Oh my God, I said again. Then I shut my laptop. I wasn't ready to absorb what just happened. I needed to get a good night's sleep before I could process anything this heavy. But the next time I searched for my father's profile on Facebook, it was gone.
That's some spooky stuff.
It sure is. Now, I don't know the author of this story, and I don't know how true it is. If it is true, I sure can't explain how that picture of the author's dad came to be in the bedside table drawer. But I might be able to explain how her dad popped up on Facebook.
Really?
Yeah. You see, social networking sites, as all-encompassing as they feel like, they don't know when their users die unless somebody specifically tells them.
That's true, right.
Yeah. Facebook realizes this, and they actually know that it would be awkward to be reminded of a dead relative's birthday or just plain spooky to see a dead family member's profile recommended as a person you might know.
Yeah.
And imagine how creepy it would be if someone got access to your dear departed relative's account and started posting from it.
Yeah, that would be creepy.
So if you have a relative who has a Facebook profile and then passes away, you actually have two options. One is that you can request to have the account removed. To do this, you have to prove to Facebook that you are in fact, a relative of the deceased. And you'll need to provide them with, you know, legal documentation, such as the deceased's birth or death certificate. We'll include a link in the show notes, by the way, about how to do this. Now, my guess is that Jacqueline's father did have a Facebook account at some point. Maybe he never really used it, but it was there. And eventually, Facebook made the connection between Jacqueline and her father. Facebook's pretty clever about that, as we discussed last week.
Yeah, and it could have been someone else in her family created it as well.
Sure.
She didn't know. Or then, you know, maybe someone in Jacqueline's family contacted Facebook and requested that they remove the account afterwards, and that's why it was no longer there. So
yeah, they
that may
find
be
it
why
the next
she couldn't
day.
Find it the next day. Yeah.
Yeah. So our little Facebook ghost story could be pure spooky coincidence.
Sure. But you said you had a second option if a relative with a Facebook profile passes away.
Right. Facebook's standard policy is to memorialize the account. This means that the departed's profile remains on Facebook, but it's locked. No one can log into it or change anything, but you can still see it. I actually personally have a Facebook account on my friends list that is memorialized. It's someone I know who passed away a couple of years ago.
Right.
So I think it's kind of nice. People can leave notes and stuff, sort of the digital equivalent of leaving flowers at someone's grave. But if I found it morbid or disturbing, I could always just unfriend the account.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure Facebook won't suggest them as, quote, someone I might know afterward.
Hopefully. Well, and that seems cool. But here's a question. Okay, let's say I die, sure. And I want my Facebook account to keep going. Is there any way I could, like, leave messages or status updates for my friends and family after I die? Or, on the same note, can I tweet from beyond the grave?
Ray, that's weird and just a little creepy. I like where your head's at. And yes, you'll be glad to know that you can tweet from beyond the grave.
Okay. Tweeting or updating your Facebook status after you passed on, how does that work?
Well, there are actually quite a few different websites and even apps that will help you do this. I guess some people were just really inspired by the movie P.S. I Love You.
Oh, and that's the movie where a woman who is breaking up when her Irish husband dies starts getting letters from him that he wrote before he died, encouraging her to go on adventures and stuff, right?
Yeah, in the movie it's super romantic. In real life, it might be kind of creepy.
Yeah, you know? I think so.
I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't write letters or even make videos for your loved ones in case of your early passing, but I think they should know about it in advance.
Yeah, sure.
I think suddenly getting a letter in the mail from you know, your dead husband or seeing your deceased beloved's Facebook account suddenly getting updated might creep people out instead of inspire them with hope and love.
Yeah, that might be a little odd.
So you know your loved ones best. You're the only one who can decide if this is a great idea or a ghoulishly morbid one. So I would think carefully about using any of these services I'm about to tell you about. But that said, the first and maybe most popular website for sending messages from the afterlife is ifidie.net.
Last words. We all hope we'll get a chance to say some. But not knowing when or where we're going to die makes it a bit tricky. Thankfully, with If I Die, it's a whole lot easier. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, I don't remember scheduling an appointment with death anytime soon. And you're right, but so is death right around the corner. So don't wait until it's too late.
As a little morbid, but...
Yeah, I love that guy.
So, how does this work?
All right, well, If I Die has a Facebook app, and I think there's also an iPhone app. I'm not sure about that last one, but you can leave on the Facebook app status updates or record videos, either for general people or for specific people. It's actually pretty easy to set up and use.
Okay, so how does If I Die know if you've shuffled off this mortal coil?
Good question. In the case of If I Die, specifically, you have to specify three Facebook friends. All three have the ability to inform If I Die if you've, you know, played your last game of Farmville. if all three of them confirm, If I Die starts sending out your messages.
Oh.
Now, there's another website that takes a different approach. It's called lastwrite.com. That's W-R-I-T-E, right? Lastwrite.com allows you to send messages, videos, and status updates, just like If I Die. But instead of depending on your friends to confirm that you've kicked the bucket, they check with the U.S. government.
Oh, okay.
According to Last Write, each day their database downloads a list of quote-unquote expired Social Security numbers. So if your number is on that list, presumably the U.S. government no longer considers you a taxpayer.
Mm.
And Last Write will start sending out messages. Now, there's a couple other websites that have alternate takes on this as well.
There are more?
Oh, yeah. There's more than a few, but I just wanted to mention two. One has kind of a morbid name, www.deathswitch.com.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of a dead man switch?
Yeah, it's basically like a trigger that if you take your foot off of it, the device stops. Like forklifts have them. You have to stand on this space or the forklift stops so, you know, other people don't get hurt.
Okay, so Death Switch operates on basically the same principle. Huh. What they do is they send you emails very often, and you have to respond to these emails to verify that you're still alive. If you miss an email, the website goes into worry mode. It will try reaching you via alternate email addresses, and you can even set it up to send emails to your friends and ask them to contact you. If all that fails, Death Switch will decide you're dead and start sending out messages. In fact, of course, I was trying to test this weekend, and you got one of the worry emails. But I think Death Switch won't have me declared dead for another 24 hours.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad you're not dead yet.
No, not yet.
Because otherwise I'd had to do the show by myself, and that would have been a disaster. So, yeah. Okay, so what if you're on like a cruise to the Bahamas, and you sneak off and you don't tell anyone?
Okay, Death Switch has you covered. If you're going on vacation, you can tell it to stop sending the Are You Alive emails for a while. Very thoughtful of them, don't you think?
Yeah.
There's one more website I wanted to mention, although it is still in development. Don't you think all those social networking sites are pretty discriminatory? I mean, Twitter, Facebook, Living Social, they all insist that you have to be alive to participate. Well, good news, because soon there's going to be a social network for the living impaired. It's
what?
Called, yep, it's called Dead Social. By the way, the website is deadsoci.al. If you go to www.deadsocial.com, you're going to be treated to some weird social networking site for goth kids. It's got a lot of skulls and purple text.
Okay, so it's deadsoci.al.
Yep.
Okay.
So Dead Social isn't fully live yet. But it sounds like the most ambitious of the social networking after death projects. They actually have a Kickstarter campaign going on. Supposedly they will be out of beta soon. And then all your dearly departed loved ones can get to tweeting.
Okay, great. Seriously, though, Tom, would you ever use something like this?
I don't know, Ray. I mean, I like the idea of leaving some final words for loved ones. But honestly, I'm a little skeptical of depending on some website somewhere, which may or may not go out of business, to deliver my last words. Plus, all these services assume that Twitter and Facebook account, you know, they're going to be around forever. But what if this was 5 years ago when we're talking about MySpace? MySpace was a big thing, and now no one goes there. So if I had a service set up to send my last words out on MySpace, you know, how useless would that be?
Yeah, really.
Nobody even checks
it. It's hard to look that far into the future about things.
Exactly. And so I'm like, Facebook's pretty big, but will they be around in 50 years, you know?
Yeah, because things really change fast on the internet.
Exactly.
So, yeah, maybe it's better to kind of do things the old-fashioned way, you know, write some letters, you know, put a video on a thumb drive maybe, and, you know, leave them in the care of someone you trust.
Yeah, I agree, and that would work, I guess, but that's not really what I consider the old-fashioned way.
Okay, what's the old-fashioned way?
Haunting them from beyond the grave, of course.
All right. Well, we have to take a quick break.
But don't go anywhere, my friends.
Okay. And, if you haven't already, show us some love and subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. If you've already subscribed, as we've said many times, leave a review for us on iTunes. The more subscribers we get and the reviewers we get, the higher we get ranked in iTunes. So it'll get us more listeners. There's links to the podcast and all our social network pages on the right-hand side of our website, Deemable.com. You're listening to Deemable.com. Welcome back to Deemable Tech, not Deemable.com, but that is our website. I'm Ray Hunchback Hollister, joined, of course, by my co-host, the terrible Tom Brown. So we've got another question here that's very relevant to today's episode. Edgar writes, I've recently been thinking about what would happen to my online accounts if something happened to me. I have numerous email accounts, bank accounts, credit card accounts, plus things like social networking accounts. I also have a private blog that I kind of use as an online diary. And that's just the accounts I can think of off the top of my head. If I died, I don't know how my wife would get into all that stuff. She probably wouldn't even think to look for half of it. I've started keeping a list of all my accounts and passwords, but passwords change and I have to remember to update the list. Can you guys suggest any better ideas?
That is a terrific question, Edgar, and it's terrific because it's one that people don't think about, and they should. Virtually everyone has a huge digital footprint nowadays.
Yeah.
When we pass on, how are our loved ones supposed to get access to all our accounts? At the very least, you probably want someone to delete your Twitter account or whatever, but there might be critical financial information they need that's online, or critical emails they need to get to that only you had access to because they were in your account.
Right.
People don't tend to think about that, but you should. So good for you, Edgar. The term for what you're talking about is actually digital estate management.
Hmm.
Because really, the online accounts you own aren't, they're not really any different from having a life insurance policy, a car, or an electric bill.
Right.
You plan for what's going to happen to these things when you pass away. Who does the life insurance policy pay out to? Who gets the car? You know, who makes the sure that the utility company gets their blood money? So you need to think about the same things for your online estate. And silly as it may seem, you know, your level 80 World of Warcraft character has value. And you should actually leave instructions about how to get access to that when you pass away unexpectedly.
Yeah, same thing with, like, Second Life. Like, there's literal money in there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only payable in Second Life, but you can cash it out for American dollars. So that's a real value, real estate.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there are several online services that have popped up for this kind of thing. Three big ones that you're likely to come across if you are looking for help in the digital estate management area are SecureSafe.com, LegacyLocker.com, and AssetLock.net.
Okay, great. Now, here at Deemable Tech, of course, we like to test things out for ourselves before we recommend them to our listeners. So, Tom, I know you've been trying out these websites.
Right?
Which one would you recommend?
Honestly, none of them.
Really? None of them?
Yeah, I would not feel comfortable recommending any of these services to you based on my experience testing them, especially if you're serious about digital estate planning. I tried all the ones I just mentioned and more, and what I discovered was in most cases they were buggy and glitchy, and in some cases they just flat out did not work. And they pretty much all wanted money, of course.
Wow. Now, the ones that wanted money, did you try them out too? Did you pay for them and see how it worked?
You know, our budget here at Deemable Tech is what is it again?
I think it's zero.
Zero, yeah. No, I did not. So, but most of them had, you know, free trials and stuff. But even those did not inspire confidence.
Wow. I was wondering if it was like a freemium where you get it for free, but you could pay for extra features.
Yeah, some of them are. Like, there's one that you can send one message after you die.
Gotcha.
For free, but if you want more.
That's not good. I mean, obviously you want a service you can trust absolutely to store your private information and to distribute it to people you specify after you die. I mean, it's literally a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
And if you can't trust the people who are going to do it, well, I guess you could come back and haunt them as you keep
exactly.
Otherwise, yeah,
but that's plan B. I would rather just have a trustworthy, you know, executor of my digital estate.
Okay, yeah. So I was going to say, so if you wouldn't recommend any of those websites, what would you recommend for Edgar?
I would suggest the DIY approach, honestly.
The do-it-yourself?
Yep.
Okay.
Even if these websites did work really well, I still think handling this yourself might be the way to go anyways, because you can't know how secure these services are.
Okay, but you said handle it yourself. Again, this is assuming you're dead.
Oh, well, beforehand.
Okay.
I'm talking about planning ahead. Yeah.
All right, so tell me how that would work.
Yeah. I mean, if you... Never mind. So here's what you can do to make sure that your wife gets access to all your accounts, Edgar. Start by using a password manager. Now, basically, that's a system that stores all your passwords for you. These managers are intended to make your life easier by remembering all your passwords for you so you don't have to. And they work great at that.
Yes.
But as an added bonus, you know what they do? They act as master lists of all your accounts and passwords, which is exactly what you want.
Yes, that is fantastic.
There's three services that we have both used and can recommend, and they are KeePass, that's K-E-E Pass, and you can find it at keypass.info. There's LastPass, LastPass.com, and RoboForm, which is RoboForm.com, RoboForm.com. And they all work slightly differently, but they're all perfectly good at what they do, which is to store passwords and online accounts.
Okay.
You just really need, for each one, you need to remember one secure password for the service, and then you can use that password to access the login information for any online account you have. So, Edgar, you just need to set one of these services up and start using it. Then write down the master password for that service and either give it to your wife or someone like the lawyer who is the executor of your will.
Right.
And you could even just stash it in a safe along with some instructions on how to get into it. For instance, if you know, your last password vault. And then should the unthinkable happen, your wife will have a straightforward and up-to-date list of all your online accounts and login information.
Yeah, I know I manage multiple websites and multiple applications at work, and until I started using LastPass, my life was miserable trying to keep track of all of them.
And plus, if you'd have like had to leave for some reason, they would have really been in the lurch. They
would
have had that information.
So that sounds good on a good idea on a lot of levels.
Yeah, it's definitely the one I would recommend. Before we finish up, though, I wanted to mention one last website. Our longtime listener Joel put me onto this one. Similar to those password management services, this one isn't really intended for digital estate management, but it definitely can be used for that. And even if not, it's just plain useful. It's called www.emergencylink.com. You can sign up for free. As far as I know, it's entirely free. Once you do, Emergency Link sends you several cards and stickers with a phone number and an account number on them. You can stick one in your wallet, one in your keychain, etc. If you get in an accident and a stranger finds you, the idea is that they'll see this card from Emergency Link and they'll call the phone number on it. Emergency Link actually has a live 24-hour hotline, and once they reach Emergency Link, they just give them the account number that they've found on this card, and Emergency Link will notify whoever you have specified with whatever information you have specified. So, for instance, maybe the ER, you know, if you got in an accident, needs to know that you're allergic to penicillin. And that's something you could store in Emergency Link, and then you could set it so that anyone with the account number could get access to that information. Or you could store things like account and passwords in their system, like we were just discussing, and grant your wife access to them in case of an emergency. Emergency Link also allows you to store documents, so it's all kinds of useful. Joel and I actually tested it out. He has an Emergency Link card on his keychain, so he sent me a picture of it, and I called Emergency Link, and I gave him the account number on the card and told him I'd found a lost set of keys. They emailed him with the information within an hour. So if Joel had actually lost his keys, that story would have had a happy ending.
Huh, okay. That sounds like a pretty useful service. I used to actually have something similar to it that they would send you tags that you could put on your laptop and your keychain, and if it was lost, the person would call. And actually, it didn't turn out. I lost both my keys and my laptop, and
they
never called.
And they had the sticker? Oh, it stinks.
So I think they were actually stolen, but that's a different story. But so this does sound like a useful service, though. So... Edgar, why don't you try both? You know, set up one of the password management tools that we mentioned earlier and store your passwords there, and also, you know, sign up for Emergency Link.
Yeah.
That way, if something happens to you, you're double covered.
Absolutely.
I do wonder, though, I wonder how they make money if it's all free.
I don't know. I'm wondering if at some point, you know, maybe it's a new service and they will charge later. A lot of times web startups work
that
way.
That's true. Yeah. All right. So we got Edgar covered, but probably the vast majority of people do not have a digital estate plan in place. If my Uncle Jimmy gets Asian bird flu and dies, is there any way I can figure out what online account he has and how to access them?
That's a good question. You definitely can, although it's going to be more complicated than if they had a plan. First thing you need to do is get on Uncle Jimmy's laptop or desktop pronto. Make sure you do that before anything else.
Yeah.
You need to get into that computer, back up any files or documents he's got, and then open up his web browser.
Right.
The thing about web browsers is they keep a history of the websites you've been to, and many of them also store passwords and logins. So, for instance, if Uncle Jimmy was on Facebook the week before he died, simply opening up his browser and going to Facebook.com will probably take you directly to his profile, no login needed. So you've solved the Facebook problem right there.
Oh, okay.
The same probably goes for Twitter, Gmail, etc. Time is of the essence, though, because what happens is these websites store the fact that you're logged in cookies.
Right.
Which is just a little piece of information on your computer. And
a little text file that says you're logged in.
They have an expiration date. So the longer you wait, the more likely it is that login will expire. And in that case, you will have to give a password to Facebook and you won't have it. Even then, possibly you might be okay, because in some cases, browsers will autocomplete your passwords. It's also probably a good idea to go through Uncle Jimmy's browser history to find out what other websites he used. Like, for instance, what website does he bank on?
Right. And hopefully you won't find anything, you know, awkward.
Yeah, that's a possibility. But let's remember Uncle Jimmy for the good websites he went to and not the bad ones.
And if you are the person entrusted to go through that information, perhaps use discretion on what you share with other family members.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Now, for some
reason... Sorry, Uncle Jimmy.
He was a good man. He was a good man. Now, for some reason, this doesn't work for you. You're going to have to go through some legal channels to get what you want. Facebook requires, as we mentioned before, they need proof of death and relationship to you.
Right.
And then you can either memorialize the account or permanently delete it. Modifying it is apparently not an option. LinkedIn is a bit simpler. You need to send an email to customerservice@linkedin.com with the word deceased in the title. And then you need to give them some personal information about the account to verify that you know the deceased.
That worries me.
Yeah.
Because that seems really easy to take advantage of and that, mess with people's lives.
I'm there with you.
Maybe they need to secure that up a little bit.
Fortunately, I don't use LinkedIn for anything at all. But yeah I agree that it could be more secure.
So I could just pretend that I was, oh, yeah, that person's dead.
Mm. There's a prank for April Fool's Day.
And now our listeners know. Don't do that, folks.
Next week, how to hack your friends. No. So Twitter, like Facebook, they require a death certificate and a driver's license.
Huh.
In addition, they will also need a notarized letter, so they're very secure.
What if the person didn't have a driver's license?
They need your driver's license.
Oh,
they want to know that you are related to the person.
Okay, all right.
You're related to Uncle Jimmy.
That makes sense.
Google has a similar process for gaining access. You need all that information. In their case, you also need to email them a sample email that you receive from Uncle Jimmy's account, complete with the header information. Mm. Header information is usually hidden when you look at an email, but almost every email program or website offers you a way to view it. And I think Google just wants that to verify that, yes, you've received emails from this account and you really do know this person. Other services may not have clear policies. Apple, for instance, does not seem to. So you just need to cross your fingers and provide lots of documentation about both yourself and the deceased party.
Right, and that was actually something that came out recently. Bruce Willis said he was going to sue Apple.
Oh, really?
Because apparently with iTunes, the terms of service is after you die, the music isn't yours.
Whoa.
So it's pretty much simple. Like, it's not yours anymore.
Huh.
So that is something that people have been a little up in arms about. So, but Apple hasn't clearly said that that is actually what happens. But there's no clear way to transition that ownership of the files to...
Yeah,
that
sounds like one of those legal cover our butt things that the lawyers put in.
Yeah.
Nobody thought about it.
Yeah.
So whatever the case, you're really going to need a lot of legal documentation, and you'll have to send it by snail mail or, if you are really lucky, fax.
Wow. And this is why you want to plan ahead for this kind of stuff, because this doesn't sound like fun.
No, exactly. Imagine doing this while you're going through funeral arrangements and the grieving process. Anyways, we're going to post links to the Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Google's instructions on how to do this in the show notes. So if this should ever come up, hopefully it won't, you'll have access to that information.
So, Tom, how do you feel about toilet seats?
I don't like them on cold winter mornings, but fortunately there aren't that many of them here in Florida.
Cold winter mornings, not toilet seats.
Yes.
Plenty of toilet seats. Okay.
And I'm not really fond of the cushioned ones that are furry. That just weirds me out. Otherwise, I don't have a strong opinion on toilet seats, Ray. Why do you bring this up?
Well, okay, so they're not something you love or care about, right?
Not deeply, no. They're kind of gross, I mean, even if you really keep them clean.
Okay, so you definitely wouldn't want to touch all over it with your fingers and hold your face against one for long periods of time, right?
Oh, no, that's disgusting.
Okay, well, I agree. That's why this story really grossed me out.
Oh, boy.
Researchers in Britain have determined that mobile phones, like iPhones and Android phones, have as much as 10 times more nausea and stomach problem causing bacteria on them than toilet seats.
Dude. That is groovy.
The researchers found lots of coliform bacteria on the phones that they gathered for the tests. Now, and hopefully this will be the last time that I ever say this word on the show. But of course, since they found coliform bacteria on the phones, that indicates the presence of fecal matter on the phones.
Ew.
Now, they didn't find any E. coli, but the coliforms that they did find can cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and other stomach problems. They also found the bacteria that causes pink eye and the flu virus.
Whoa.
And they believe that the reason why is because mobile phones are often passed from person to person.
Yeah.
They get sneezed on.
Yeah.
They get taken to the bathroom.
Oh, I would never.
And the worst part, unlike most toilet seats, they are rarely cleaned.
That's true.
And if they are cleaned, they're hardly ever cleaned with something that will actually kill bacteria. And the problem is that the chemicals that will actually kill bacteria, like alcohol, can damage your phone.
Really?
Yeah, because iPhones and some Android phones have oleophobic coatings on them to protect the screen from oils and smear so you don't get fingerprints all over it, or not as many. And if you use alcohol or Windex, you can remove that protective coating. And water, unfortunately, hardly does anything to kill bacteria.
Oh. Well,
that's now, in okay. a related story, one man found out how disgusting mobile phones truly are when he paid a really high price for stealing a phone. He contracted the Ebola virus.
What?
He incredibly, stupidly stole the phone from an isolation ward at a hospital in Uganda back in August. Unfortunately, the patient that he stole the phone from died from Ebola, but he reported the phone as missing before he died. And the thief checked him into the same hospital when he started showing symptoms and confessed his crime to the police. But Tom, there is good news.
Really, Ray? What's that? Because I'm about to lose my lunch over here.
Scientists at the University of California believe that they may be able to power our cell phones in the future with these disgusting little creatures.
Really?
Yeah, a virus called M13 bacteriophage. It generates a tiny electrical charge when it digests bacteria.
Huh.
And actually, a lot of viruses produce electrical charges when they digest food. But what makes the M13 bacteriophage virus special mm-hmm. is that it's shaped like a tiny rod.
Okay.
So kind of like a little pencil.
Right.
You can imagine it in your mind. So you can put those viruses in rows and then put the rows into layers.
Huh.
And then the viruses can be fed yummy bacteria, so the little virus slaves will charge your batteries.
Okay, but do you think it's a good idea to intentionally put viruses on something that we keep next to us all the time, so close to our body?
Well, the virus only eats bacteria, so it's not harmful to humans. Yet.
Dun, dun, dun.
Let's see. I think we got time for one more question we can read real quick. Do we have another one real quick we can do?
Let's see here. Okay, there's an email with a person who's dealing with a zombie computer.
Does it want brains?
No. The owner just says he wants the computer to stay dead, but Apple won't let it rest in peace. Frank sends us an email that says, I have an old iPod with all of my music on it, around 80 gigs worth. My old computer died on me, so I bought a new laptop. But what I've discovered is that it's asking me to authorize more computers, and I've already authorized 4 computers, including the dead computer. So does that mean I can't listen to my music on my new computer? Obviously, I can't boot up my old computer and unauthorize it. And I couldn't find a way to unauthorize my old computer from my new computer. Is there any way to do that, or am I screwed?
Okay, that's a great question, Frank. And we will answer that question right after we get back. We gotta take another quick break. You're listening to Deemable Tech.
Welcome back to Deemable Tech. I am Count Thomas von Braun, joined, of course, by my co-host, Baron Rayburn Hollister III.
All right, so before the break, we had a question from Frank, who's dealing with his zombie computer.
That's right.
He had his computer died.
Yep.
And he went to set up his new computer, and iTunes was asking him, okay, do you want to authorize this computer? You've already authorized 4 computers. And you can only authorize 5 computers on iTunes at one time. So, again, thanks for your email, Frank. And, well, from what you described in your email, it sounds like you have 3 computers that are working that you want to be authorized on your iTunes account. and one dead computer that you don't want to be authorized. And I'm guessing the other three are like family computers or something.
Maybe his iPad.
Sure. Well, no, actually PCs or
oh, they're separate.
Or Macs, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
For the rest of our listeners, like I was saying, iTunes lets you download the same songs, movies, books, and sync your iPod, iPhone, or iPad to multiple computers if they're authorized. But like I said, you can only authorize 5 computers at the same time.
Right.
So unfortunately, there isn't any way to unauthorize a computer on iTunes unless you have access to that computer.
Uh-oh.
So yeah, fortunately, right now that's not a problem for you because you still have one more you can do. But obviously, it will become a problem if you buy another computer down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So for now, all you need to do is authorize your new computer on iTunes. You don't have to worry about anything else. But when you do get a new computer and you run out of computers that you can authorize on iTunes, what you can do then is deauthorize all computers associated from the account. From there, you'll reauthorize all of the computers that you want to be authorized.
Each one individually.
Right. So to deauthorize all computers associated with your account, you'll open iTunes, sign in, then click Store on the menu bar, and then click Account. And you'll re-enter your password. And then in the account information window that appears, you'll click the Deauthorize All button.
Okay.
So it's actually pretty simple. It's just, you know, don't bother with it unless you've actually maxed out the 5.
Okay.
And that's it. Now, after you hit deauthorize all of your computers will be deauthorized, and you won't be able to download any of your iTunes content on any computer or sync any of your iPods, iPhones, or iPads.
Great. Oh, wait.
That is, obviously, until you go back into each computer and reauthorize it. Keep in mind, though, you can only do this once a year. So if you need to deauthorize a computer, try doing it on the actual computer that you're deauthorizing.
Yeah.
And something to keep in mind for folks who are upgrading to Windows 8, iTunes is going to look at Windows 7 or Windows XP and the new Windows 8 machine, even though it's the same computer, it's going to look at it as 2 separate computers.
Oh,
so before you upgrade, go ahead and deauthorize that computer and then upgrade and reauthorize the new computer, quote unquote.
Good advice, Ray. Thanks.
Well, let me ask you, Tom, what do you want on your tombstone?
I like ham and pineapple.
Okay, no, I mean your actual tombstone.
Honestly, I haven't given it much thought up to this point.
Oh, well, some folks are getting high tech and adding QR codes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, well, and I have said this before, and I'll say it again. Nobody knows what the heck a QR code is.
That's true.
So, Tom, explain to the good people at home what a QR code is.
Well, we talked about it in depth on episode 7, but basically a QR code is a type of barcode, but it's two-dimensional instead of one-dimensional like a UPC code. They look like small crossword puzzles with squares in the corner, basically. And whereas a UPC code is just a string of numbers, QR codes can store much more data in them, like website addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, or just plain text.
Right. And these QR codes can be read by smartphones like iPhones, Androids, Windows phones, and even BlackBerries.
Uh-huh.
And even Palm WebOS phones had little QR code readers. All that you have to do is download an app, then fire up the app when you see a code, and hold the camera over the app. The app then reads the QR code and either tells you what's in the code or just takes you to the website if the code is a website address.
Right.
So All Things Considered did a story about this back in September. There's a company called Digital Legacies, and it's legacy and then an S, not L-A-G-A-C-I-E-S.
That is really bad spelling.
Yeah, I don't know why they spelled it that way, but it's L-A-G-A-C-Y-S. And what they do is they create brass QR codes that you can affix to headstones that link to a website for the deceased.
Okay.
On the website, survivors can post a memorial to the deceased, photos, videos, and audio clips. And also visitors can leave comments on the site, so it can be a living legacy. For $99, the purchaser gets the brass QR code and the website for 1 year. For $149, you can get a lifetime subscription, which, and I hate to joke about this, maybe this wasn't the best choice of names for something in the death business.
Yeah, a lifetime subscription.
But the lifetime subscription gives you the brass QR code, and you don't have to pay for the website every year. It just continues on. I don't know whose lifetime they're talking about.
Yeah.
Obviously not the person's in the grave because it already be expired.
So, okay, that's
terrible,
interesting.
Terrible to joke about that, but why did they pick lifetime? Yeah, anyways.
The obvious problem I see is that unless they have some super amazing bonding agent that I've never heard of, it's going to be fairly easy to remove the QR code and put it on someone else's headstone or just steal them and vandalize them.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too when I heard the story on the radio. I did a little digging and I found another company that also creates QR codes for headstones, but this company actually makes headstones themselves and they engrave the QR codes into them.
Ah, I would like that better.
That company is called Quiring Monuments. And it's Quiring Monuments. And they charge a $75 upcharge for the QR code. And again, a lifetime subscription for the website memorial.
Why, people?
When
why?
You buy a headstone from them. Now, if you already have a headstone, they will make you a granite attachment, which, again, same problem. But they charge $150 for that.
Okay.
So both companies are offering an interesting product, you know, to help with the grieving process and to honor the deceased. But it is interesting because QR codes really haven't gained any use traction with the general population.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if it'll be a fad that never really catches on. And I've said this before, but I think that unless Apple or Google really embraces the QR code, or maybe Microsoft, if Microsoft Windows Phone really takes off, and they incorporate it into the basic operating system of the phone, QR codes will never really take off.
Yeah, I agree. It needs to be easy and automatic.
Right. It needs to be easy enough for my grandmother to do it. But as long as we have to download an app before we can read the code, it'll never be mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that Apple will do it because the aesthetics of QR codes, well, just they're kind of ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And Google is way too focused on NFC, near field communication. So, and I mean, at this point, I could see NFC becoming a more recognized platform than QR codes, even though, you know, I've been seeing them everywhere these days, you know, posters, billboards, drink cups, magazines, everywhere.
I noticed them on my bag of shredded lettuce that I bought at the supermarket the other day.
Yeah, and so now they're even on headstones. But, you know, the only one of those that's going to be around for a while is headstones. So maybe that's a good sign for QR codes?
Maybe.
I don't know.
All right. Well, Ray, speaking of, you know, death.
Yeah, we've been speaking a lot of that today.
Did you know that you can commit virtual suicide?
Really? What does that even mean?
Well, what if you want to completely eliminate your social networking virtual life? You decide to get off Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, all of it.
Why would I want to do that?
Well,
so if I did want to do that, I guess I could go into each account and delete it.
Yeah, but you know that if you do that, especially on Facebook, they really just disable your account and all your information, all your friend connections, they're all still stored on a server somewhere. So technically, you're still online.
Ooh, that's true. I didn't think about that. Okay, so if I wanted to completely commit digital or virtual suicide, how would I do that?
Just go to www.suicidemachine.org.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You pick, this is an actual website, you pick any of your social network accounts and give the suicide machine your login info. Then you watch the machine takes over and goes in and deletes every single one of your personal connections right before your eyes. The best part is there's no backing out. Once you've started the virtual suicide process, you are committed. And, now, I do have to go give a big disclaimer here. As we mentioned before, we like to test things before we recommend them. I have not tried out suicidemachine.org because I did not want to eradicate my entire social network footprint.
Yeah, you're pretty plugged in. I mean, that would be like death for you.
It would. Maybe I should consider unplugging someday. But if any of our listeners have just had enough, check out www.suicidemachine.org and let us know how it goes for you. Now, Ray, we've talked a lot about death today, tweeting from beyond the grave and that sort of stuff, and we've found some weird websites. But I have found one that I believe is weirder than anything we've discussed yet.
Weirder than the suicide machine?
Yep.
Weirder than Dead Social or If I Die?
Definitely.
Okay, I'm not sure I even want to know what this website is.
Good, I'll tell you.
No, I said...
Ray, the problem with all these websites we've been talking about is they assume that you're going to die. What if there was a website that could help you live forever? There is. It's called lifenaut.com. That's lifenaut.com, like astronaut.
Okay, you're throwing me a curveball. I love this. How can a website help you live forever?
All right, well, these guys are optimists. I'll say this. LifeKnot first asks you to create a quote-unquote mind file, which means uploading pictures, videos, biographical information, personal timelines, anything about yourself that you can think of. The idea is that someday they can use this information to create a virtual version of you.
Yeah, sure they can.
But once they've created your virtual brain from your mind file in 2157, mm-hmm. they'll need a body to put it in. So then you need to create what LifeKnot calls a biofile. And here's how they describe that. First, you sign up for the LifeKnot biofile project. There is no charge. However, they would greatly appreciate your tax-deductible donations.
I bet they would.
Yeah. Then they send you a bottle of mouthwash and a collection tube. You gargle the mouthwash and send it to them. They collect the live cells from your sample and store them at liquid nitrogen temperature, which is 190 degrees Celsius, negative 190 degrees Celsius, for an indefinite period of time. After you have been declared legally dead, future technology may be able to grow you a new body via ectogenesis, and your mind file may be able to be downloaded into it, enabling you to live on indefinitely.
Okay, so wait a minute. Except for the DNA and the body regeneration, all this sounds like the plot of a TV show. I just can't place it. Oh, yeah, Caprica.
Yeah.
You know, the prequel to Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah.
That's exactly how the avatar for Zoe Greystone was created.
Right, yeah.
They took all of her data and recreated her in the virtual world.
So these guys are just, you know, kind of getting ahead of the game a little bit.
Okay, so they want to collect your DNA in a bottle of mouthwash and store it cryogenically.
Yep.
And then they're going to recreate your body and put your brain or your mind back into it and all your memories.
So what do you think? Weirdest website we've talked about?
Yeah, that one wins. pretty much hands down. That's great.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, let's see.
Do we have time for one more question?
I think we do. Okay, so I noticed you shaved your head this week.
Oh, yes,
what's
I
up
did.
With the new look?
Well, Ray, you know that my idol is Justin Bieber.
No, I did not know that.
He's amazing. I think he's just so talented and stuff. And that hair.
Right.
So you can imagine, I was devastated when I got on Twitter and saw the trending hashtag #PoundBaldForBieber. Bieber. Bald for Bieber.
Okay, so hang on. For our listeners, hashtags, of course, are a way of categorizing your Twitter posts. You just put a pound sign in front of a word or phrase, just like in this case, bald for Bieber. Then anyone who clicks on that hashtag will see all the current tweets anywhere that contained a hashtag. And Twitter lists the most popular hashtags on the right side of their website under trending topics.
Right. So I saw that and I clicked on pound bald for Bieber. And I found all these awful tweets about how he has cancer and he's undergoing chemo and he's losing all his hair. So in solidarity with Justin Bieber, I decided to shave my head.
Ah, I see. Well, Tom, I don't know how to put this.
Yeah.
Basically, you've been punked.
What?
Yes, my friend, it looks like you fell for an elaborate hoax pulled off by the good people at 4chan.
Okay, so for our listeners that don't know, 4chan is, as they say on their website, a simple image-based bulletin board where anyone can post comments and share images. It's an anonymous community, and they're pretty much known for starting trouble. But they're mostly well-known on the internet as a community that likes to create image memes or those funny cat pictures with captions on them that you see on Facebook and Pinterest.
Yeah, most of those funny pictures that you see started on 4chan or 9gag, a similar site. Then they were posted on Reddit. And finally, someone posted them on Facebook or pinned them on Pinterest. So anyway, Mashable, an internet news website, caught wind of what 4chan had done, and they wrote a report about it. According to the story, the hoax started with a screenshot of what appears to be a tweet from Entertainment Tonight's official Twitter account announcing that Bieber was diagnosed with cancer that morning and suggested fans go to #BaldForBieber in support of the pop icon. The photo also shows what looks to be a tweet from Justin Bieber's official account thanking ET for the support. Shortly after the tweets, a website, baldforbieber.com, launched showing photoshopped tweets from the pop star thanking fans for support, as well as a number of fake news stories that seemed to confirm the rumor. A YouTube video on the site's homepage showed videos of fans supposedly shaving their heads in support of the Biebs, and a gallery of photos on another page shows that those who have supposedly shaved their heads in support of the pop star.
This is very well orchestrated.
Yeah, now, it all seemed legitimate until you actually go to Entertainment Tonight's actual Twitter feed and saw that ET had never sent that tweet, and Justin Bieber never responded to it on his Twitter account. Neither Justin Bieber, his management, or Entertainment Tonight have made any public statements about the hoax, but his bodyguard did debunk the myth on Twitter.
His bodyguard has a Twitter account?
Yeah, everybody's got a Twitter account, okay. Tom. So, although it seems that at least a few dozen folks fell for it, and #BaldForBieber was a trending topic on Twitter for quite a while last week, this was a practical joke. Now, let me say this. You know, starting a rumor on the internet that someone has cancer or died, that's not funny. But convincing even a few people to shave their heads before even doing a little research out of sheer obsession over someone, that's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, whatever.
All right, well, we've got a voicemail. I think we can do that one real quick. It's from Amber. Let's hear that.
Hi, I'm Amber from Jacksonville. I'm having a problem with my call waiting on my iPhone 4S from Sprint. Ever since I updated to iOS 6, when I'm on a call and someone else calls me, I hear the call waiting beep, but nothing shows up on my screen, and there's no button to switch to the other call or ignore the call, and when I get done with the call I'm on, there's no evidence of any missed call left on my phone, unless they leave a voicemail. There's no little indicator telling me there's a missed call, and it doesn't show up on my call log, so I have no idea who called me. Is there something wrong with my phone? Is it a setting I need to change? Thanks for your help.
Thanks for your email, Amber. And it looks like you're not alone. There are a couple of complaints about this on Apple Support Communities Forum on Apple's website. Unfortunately, I haven't found a definite solution to the problem, though. That and the fact that it started when you updated to iOS 6 makes me think it's probably a software issue. It could be a bug in iOS 6.0, or it could be a problem with the installation of iOS 6.0 on your phone. So let's rule out the second one, and if that doesn't work, just keep an eye out for an update from Apple. Here's what you need to do. First, completely shut your phone down and then turn it back on. Most people never do this, but it solves a lot of problems, and as they say on the IT crowd...
Hello, IT. Yeah, have you tried turning it off and on again?
That never gets old.
All you have to do is hold down the power button until the red slider comes on, slide it across, and that'll start it up. And then once it's turned off, of course, turn it back on. See if that doesn't, if that solves the problem. If it doesn't, then you need to back up your iPhone to your computer and do a reset. If that doesn't work, then you're at the mercy of Apple to fix it. I would go to Apple's website and post a comment on the forum that you're also having problems, and also contact your carrier. If they don't know it's broke, they can't fix it.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for all your emails, and keep them coming. Questions@deembull.com. And call us. Leave us a voicemail at 904-372-3336.
That's right. We don't bite.
Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a good review if you enjoyed it. And if you didn't enjoy it, like we always say, still go ahead and leave us a good review.
We won't tell anybody.
That's right. Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening. And have a great week. Support for Deemable Tech is provided by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting, on the web at asmallorange.com, and by A Edelson LLC, simple, green, technology consulting, on the web at aedelson.com, and by Jack's Computer Guys, providing desktop and laptop service for all of Northeast Florida, on the web at jackscomputerguys.com.